A strong woman knows she has strength enough for the journey, but a woman of strength knows it's in the journey where she will become a true badass. Welcome to Big Dick Energy with Jasmine.
Big Dick Energy with Jasmine.
Unconventional, unapologetic, raw and real, serving today's woman. If it's mindset, fulfillment, motivation, purpose, life, business, marriage, and sex, we're talking about it with that big dick energy. Ladies, it's time to have some real talk with zero bullshit.
Zero bullshit.
And if the word fuck offends you, good. Welcome to Big Dick Energy. Now your host, Jasmine Daisy.
Happy Tuesday, fuckers, coming in hot. And I do mean hot because it is hot in the Yucatan Peninsula here in Merida. I love Mexico. It's boiling hot. I truly am coming in hot, like physically, mentally, and spiritually for this podcast today. Welcome to Big Dick Energy with your hostess, me, Jasmine Daisy, in the house. Today's topic, fuck other people's opinions. Fuck them. Fuck them, right? I guarantee anyone listening right now, I don't care if you're a politician, I don't care if you're a fucking priest, I don't care if you are a 15-year-old living in your mom's basement and going, I fucking hate my parents are pricks. Fuck other people's opinions, okay? Every single person in this world, me included, has an opinion. And here's the thing, is opinions are like assholes, right? And here's why, because everyone has one and they always fucking stink. That's not to say my asshole stinks, but that was like, that just didn't come out right. My delivery was not good there. But I think you know what I mean. Everyone has an opinion. And I wanted to say fuck other people's opinions because I see so many people. Listen, guys, I am smashed with work. I am working 7 days a week right now, only 10 to 12 hours per week, but 7 days a week right now, and every single human being I talk to is in one form or another struggling with this issue. Well, I don't know what my husband's gonna say. Why the fuck do you care what your husband's gonna say? What does your husband do? Oh, he's the mechanic. That's awesome. I love mechanics because they fix shit I don't fix. Unless the person whose opinion that you're worried about is doing exactly what it is that you want to do. So if you have a dream of having a 7 or 8 figure plus beauty business, if your husband isn't doing that or hasn't scaled multiple 7 to 8 figure beauty businesses, his opinion is irrelevant. It doesn't fucking count. You don't need his permission. There's no exceptions on this. Well, you don't understand. We have a joint account. Who fucking cares? Your name's on that joint account, right? Cha-ching! Charge it. Build your dream. Make it happen. And that's a whole other podcast. If your partner isn't supporting your dreams and having an opinion about it, we'll talk about that another time. Okay. Why do we care so much about other people's opinions? Why do we care about what they think about us, right? What they think about our outfit, or my personal favorite, oh my God, like I've gained weight. I don't want my mom to see me. Why do we care? Because evolution and social experience has bred us to. How sad is that? Okay. Back in the caveman days, they weren't looking at each other's loincloths and going, girl's loincloth is not looking good on her, said Zay. She has gained 15 pounds. Look at her loincloth. They're not fucking saying that because there's no judgment. It was like survive, hunt, bear children, No judgment, right? Evolution and social experience have bred us to literally be fearful of everything. And this goes into so many deeper layers than just being feared for being judged, which, right? Let's nod our heads. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I myself grew up with a mom and I love my mom. Okay. I love my mom, but there's a lot of things that she did that were really shitty and not intentional. It's a different upbringing. My mom's old school, you know, she's in her 70s. She's from the Philippines. It's a different upbringing, right? You talk back to a Filipino mom, you don't get like the Caucasian mom of like, Tommy, time out. You don't get that. You get to pick your teeth up off the fucking floor. Okay? Anyone with Filipino parents here is like, Jasmine, you have to clean your room. Like, terrifying words to hear. I'm 42, still scared to hear. Evolution and social experience have bred us to be fearful. Bred us to be judgmental of one another. So my mom was excruciatingly critical of me growing up. Like from my earliest memories, you guys. It makes me cringe, critical of me. And I remember feeling like I had to I hate to say this because it makes me feel sad because I do love my mom so much now. But I literally I did not like my mom for many years. I thought she was a really bad person. But I'm on a different level and I understand now. And forgiveness is so much easier than bearing the burden of hatred or anger, right? But my mom, I remember being around her even as a teenager and feeling like I had to tiptoe around her. Almost like I always felt nervous in her presence. Have any of you listening ever felt like that around anyone? Like it could be a spouse, it could be a boss. I know a lot of people feel intimidation around bosses. That's another thing. I've seen it. I don't currently see it because I have my own business, but I also work for an influencer who is an amazing boss. I love her and she treats me like gold. But I've worked with and for people who haven't specifically treated me like shit or judged me or made me feel inadequate, but have certainly done it to other people in their organizations. And hammering the hand here, shame on you for doing that if you're doing that, bad bosses around the world. But there is a Big Dick Energy podcast for bad bosses. Listen to me stutter. That's another thing that I had when I was young. A horrifying stutter, which I'm told is a learning disability. Fuck, it's just part of my character now. I'm cool with it because I no longer care if I'm judged for stuttering. And when you're listening to this podcast, you will see that when I spit into my mic, when I stutter, when I fumble with my words, when I go off on tangents, which I do, I'm not editing any of it because it is who I am. It is authentic Jazzy. So going back to what I was talking about, tiptoeing around my mom, right? Always feeling nervous around her. And the reason is I was so scared of what was the inevitable. Okay. And that's sound dun, dun, dun. Yeah. Was the inevitable. And the inevitable was that I was a chubby kid, right? So I was constantly, if not but almost on an absolute daily basis. You're getting fat. You're getting too fat. Oh, look at how big you are. Really horrifying things. I can't imagine saying to my two daughters. I can't ever even imagine thinking that, you know? But that was on a regular basis. That was constant, which turned into an eating disorder in my 20s and a violently abusive relationship in my 20s. But again, so many other podcasts. Oh, so many other juicy Big Dick Energy podcasts with me that need to get tapped into that you're going to love because I got some dirt and I have no filter. So I'll tell all of it to you. I don't give a shit. But giving a flying fuck, okay? So off the cuff, giving a flying fuck about other people's opinions, if they are unhealthy and unsupportive opinions, let me specify. is literally accepting emotional abuse. Let me repeat that. Giving a flying fuck about other people's opinions, if they are unhealthy and unsupportive opinions, is literally accepting emotional abuse. And for those of you who have like had your asses handed to you emotionally or physically, you might be like, well, that's not so bad. It absolutely will manifest into other things. And I promise you, friends, none of which are good. Okay? The definition of caring about what others think, too much has an actual term, which is altruism. Altruism is giving a flying fuck about what people think to the point where you're like getting anxiety over it and losing sleep over it. And if you care, it's more likely that it's because you respect or value the opinion of the person that is judging you, right? Or making you feel like they're judging you. And think of it this way, guys. If you wouldn't invite someone into your home, this is how I think of it. If you wouldn't invite someone into your home to break bread at your table and chill the fuck out with your spouse and your kids, why the fuck would you let them into your head? Right? Why would you let that fucking person into your head? Envision the person right now. Or persons, but try to envision one person that is a real thorn in your fucking side. Like, say it is a boss and you wake up and you're like in the morning and you got to go to work and you're like, I got to see this fuck face. Like, ah, please don't make weapons legal in Canada where I am right now. I'm not. Say you are. Because I feel like I'm going to get a gun and kill my boss. I hate this motherfucker so much. They make me feel so shitty and judged. Picture going to work and feeling like you had to say to that person when you saw them, Tim, I'd love for you to come over for dinner tonight with my family. Break some bread. Let's hang out. Let's shoot the shit, Tim. Let's have a glass of wine together. Let's say. Does that thought make you want to like vomit in your own mouth? If you wouldn't invite someone into your home, why the fuck would you let them into your head? Stop. It's that easy. Literally, stop. Well, you don't understand, Jazz. It's really black and white, friends, right? If someone's opinions of you, negative opinions of you, if someone's unsupportive opinions of you pay your bills, wow, that's really cool. They do nothing for you. They don't move you forward. They don't elevate you. They tear down your self-esteem. They make you feel worthless. And they don't make that person feel good either because they already hate themselves. Judgmental people fucking hate their lives, man. I know, because I used to be a judgy fuck myself. And I hated myself. And what did I do? I drank myself into a stupor almost every night. I did drugs. I was hurtful. I didn't care about people and building relationships and genuinely love. Like, I just was a shit. I was a piece of shit. And it's when you wake up and discover what the world is actually about. We're here to, like, not judge each other. We're here to love each other and encourage each other and support each other. And if someone is down, it is our moral and ethical responsibility as human beings to lift those people up. No exceptions to this rule. Marcus Aurelius, a ruler of 2,000 years ago, said, "We all love ourselves more than other people, but care more about their opinion than our own." 2,000 years ago, a genius was saying that, and it's still applying to this day, except it's worse now because they didn't have TikTok 2,000 years ago. Like, fucking bring me back. They didn't have Instagram. They weren't chilling on Facebook, right? And getting judged. And we can really, truly, remember how I said earlier in the podcast, there was so much more to this than just feeling shitty about yourself. Like, we can literally suffer acute anxiety. Okay? Like, we can get anxiety attacks or suffer acute anxiety that strangers online will cancel us for, say, an ill-considered remark, or a passerby can snap a photo of a poor outfit choice. I make them all the time. I don't give a fuck, post them. Hey, this cellulite's for everyone. But seriously, like a passerby, snap a photo of you in a poor outfit choice, mock it on Instagram for all to see. I mean, the ruthlessness and the mean-spiritedness of so many makes me sad. And it makes me sad that my kids are growing up in a world that people are real fuckers in. You know, where's the anti-bullying stuff? Where's that going? Because it feels like it's disappearing. And as the world continues to, in so many places, crumble around us, people are getting sad and they're feeling hopeless. And what happens to people when they feel those emotions? They act out in anger, right? They don't act out in sadness. They don't act out in like, I need help, I'm hurting, typically. They act out in anger. Sad. This can turn into a literal debilitating fear, a diagnosed condition called allodoxophobia. There's like an actual phobia now of this. And this is why people, a lot of people, are staying home, because they don't want to get canceled. Or they're not writing, you know, their feelings on Instagram or Facebook or any of these other platforms or Twitter, because cancel culture is everywhere. Like, you say anything, you're canceled. I don't give a fuck. Cancel me. I am like mold in cheese, motherfucker. Cancel me. I will come back on another platform. Cut me out of the cheese. Open the fridge the next day. I am growing back into that cheese. So I don't give a fuck about being canceled. But I'm a grown ass woman. Right? And I'm successful. So I don't care about other people's opinions because they don't take care of me. But how about my 14-year-old? How about my 14-year-old that has every technology on the planet? She's homeschooled, right? I spoil her a little bit. I love her, man. I want to give her some fun shit to play with. But like, what the fuck is she seeing that I'm not seeing when I'm say, working or coaching a client or on this podcast? Like, what is she seeing? Are people bullying her? I don't know. She's got some sass and she's clever, but I just, it's a difficult world out there. And adding to the difficulties of what we are experiencing in our world right now, you know, Ukraine being bombed, everyone hating Russia and Russian people that are not even involved in this war. I mean, it's a crazy, crazy fucking world right now. And the last thing we need is to care about people's fucking opinions, man. Holy shit. We all got to really take a step back, open our eyes and say, like, what matters? What matters is love, encouragement, kindness, laughter, authenticity, genuine connection, friendships, love, sex, right? Travel. This is fighting, this fucking judgment, these sad fucking hurt feelings. Fuck that. And if you are listening to this and you're like, that girl says fuck a lot, I don't appreciate it. There's the door. Bye-bye. See you later. When you do not seek or need approval, you are at your most powerful. Fucking epic words right there, right? That's some legendary shit. So much so that I'm going to say it again. When you do not seek or need approval, you are at your most powerful. That's right, folks. That's right. And your time is limited on this planet, just like mine is. 72.6 years is the average lifespan. I've got 30 years to ride this motherfucker till the wheels fall off. I'm not going to waste a single second of my time worrying about what Zebby thinks of me. I don't give a fuck about Debbie. Okay? Debbie wants to be nice, not judgmental. Come to my house. I'll make you some food. Okay? Your time is limited on this planet. So don't waste it living in the shadows of other fucking people's lives. Okay? They don't deserve it. You don't deserve it. You deserve your best life. And that is a life of feeling and being judgment-free from those around you. If you have relationships, and you can't even really call them that, but let's just say, if you have relationships, people around you that make you feel judged, that criticize you, that make comments about your hair or your weight, or you have more wrinkles. Yeah, it's called getting older, motherfucker. What the? Fucking samurai that, like, samurai sword those people out of your life. You don't need them. And when you do, you're gonna start feeling like, okay, there's less people in my life, but like, I feel lighter. Yeah, because you're trimming the fat, yo. You're growing, you're nurturing you. I gotta say this one more time. When you do not seek or need the approval of others, you are at your most powerful. I fucking love you guys. I fucking love you. If you're not in the Big Dick Energy Coaching Group on Facebook, join it. It is a private group. You come into it. Our admin or myself will approve you to come in. It is all about love and saying what we truly mean and feel. There is so much censorship out there. Let's talk about some real shit. Let's promote one another. If you've got a business you need promotion for, come on in. Let us support you. If you need coaching, if you need one-on-one, if you need group coaching, if you need referrals to other coaching companies and groups, I know the best of the best. I'll name two of them right now. They're my coaches, and I work for one of them. It's a privilege and an honor. Kayla Kraft, Mommy Millionaire, exceptional coaching programs. Sean Whalen, Lion's Den, amazing, amazing, phenomenal kick-ass coach. Myself, Master Abundance and Fulfillment Coach. I can also teach you how to be, if you are in sales or want to be, how to become the top 1% in your space and how to stay there. Much love to you all. Hit me up. Let's connect. Talk to you within the week and keep that big dick energy flowing, y'all. Peace.
You're listening to Big Dick Energy. You should see my dad's. Back to your host, Jasmine Daisy.
Jasmine Daisy. Been listening to Big Dick Energy. Unconventional, unapologetic, raw, real, and authentic. All about today's woman. Zero bullshit. Jasmine is a serial entrepreneur, sales and negotiations master, a mom and wife who's done it all. And we do mean all. We hope you enjoyed the show. We know we had fun. If you did, make sure to like, rate, and review the show. And we'll be back soon. Hook up with us on social media. See you next time on Big Dick Energy.
Happy Friday, fuckers. What is up? Big Dick Energy Friday with your hostess, Jasmine Daisy. It's been a fucking month. It's been a month, and I owe you all an apology. I'm sorry. I haven't been around. I've been fucking busy. I literally say this at the beginning of every podcast, but this is like, I think the longest I haven't put out content in a long time. And I apologize. And from the bottom of my heart, I'm fucking sorry. How can I make it up to you? Get on a coaching call with me and I'll tell you. That's my plug for the day. Happy Friday, fuckers. I'm so pumped to talk to you today. If you haven't checked me out on social media, first and foremost, crawl out from under the rock you are under. Okay. Cause it's Big Dick Energy with Jasmine. Get onto Instagram. Okay, and hop on to BDE with Jasmine Daisy. That's BDE with Jasmine Daisy, Big Dick Energy, right, guys? And check out my last post, okay? It's me, 20 pounds fucking heavier than I should be, full frontal bikini. I popped it onto social. I did the nasty today, and I want you guys to check it out. It's a great place to connect with me. You can also hit me up on Facebook, Jasmine Daisy. Drop me a DM. I am also on the World Wide Web. I'm on LinkedIn. You can check me out there. BigDickEnergy.com. Check out our website. Prices are being updated as we speak, so hang tight for those. But in the meantime, if you are looking to get in on some one-on-one and or group coaching with me, you're going to have to hit me up soon because I'm getting booked the fuck out. Okay, let's get into the episode, y'all. This episode is about marriage, okay? Or relationships, but in general, marriage. Fuck mediocre marriage. Fuck average marriage. Fuck mundane marriage. You're like, that's a long ass title. Fucking rights it is. So you get the point though, right? Fuck average relationships. Fuck them. Ew. And I've not always thought this and or said this, but I am currently living it. No disrespect to my husband. Y'all know I love me some Big D. But hey, ebbs and flows happen, and we happen to be in a bit of an ebb right now. And I want to discuss it because you know what? Not enough people are willing to discuss the things that are uncomfortable, right? People don't want to talk about being a little fat, which I did today online. Again, go check me out online. Okay? Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, everywhere. I'm everywhere. But go look at that. People are not willing to get in their bikini that they can barely fit in and post a freaking half naked shot of their body online. Why? Because we're all scared of so many things, including topics. And that's why I love to cover the shit that people are scared to talk about. I really am, right? I'll talk about fat. I'll talk about sex. I'll talk about marriage. I'll talk about bad bosses. I talk about everything. And one of the ways that I do that is I bring my own life into it. I think it's so key. If I'm just reading statistics off of fucking Google, I mean, you guys can do that yourselves and save yourself having to hear the word fuck every 3 seconds, right? Like, let's face it. But why do you come here? Why do you come to Big Dick Energy with Jasmine? Not just to get offended or so that you have a reason to get away from your fucking insane children because Auntie Jazzy's gonna be dropping some F-bombs, right? You come here because it's real raw shit. And you love that, right, you guys? Woohoo! Today's going to be a doozer. Like, I just slapped my thigh and it didn't stop moving for like 3 seconds after I hit it. Did you guys hear it? If you didn't, rewind and listen to it again. I got the Jello Jigglers going on today. But we'll talk about that on another episode. Okay, fuck average relationships, right, guys? Fuck mundane. Fuck mediocre relationships. Fuck anything mediocre. Sex, work, any relationship. It should never fucking be less than exceptional. And if it isn't, even if it's just like, oh, it's okay, it's not good enough. Mediocrity is ordinary, right? Mediocrity is common. It comes from a lack of inspiration, actually. And it really means moderate ability and or moderate value, which is, again, this is like, I'm getting bored even saying the fucking words because it's so average. I'm gonna bring up mediocrity in my marriage, like I said earlier in the episode. And there are 4 stages in relationships, right? And this is funny to me how it's considered that there are only 4 stages in a relationship, and like, where's the rest of it? The 4 stages of the relationship are: number 1, the initial meeting, the attraction, the would I suck on that or would I put my face in that? Would I put my ding dong in that? It's like, that's stage 1, right? Attraction, everything. Number 2, curiosity, interest, infatuation, That's where we're like stalking the profile, right? Or like me, really digging and fucking find out where this motherfucker lives so I can drive by his house and see what kind of car he has. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not a quitter. Okay, guys? I'm not a fucking quitter. I will tent outside someone's house and fucking see what their shit is up to. I'm married now, so that's the old me. But you know what I mean? So that's two. Curiosity, interest, infatuation. I love that part. I love that part. Number three is called the enlightenment. And that's when you become a couple or not. But these are the stages of a relationship. So you are. The enlightenment is becoming the couple. And number four is commitment. Okay, guys? So you're not sticking your dick in anyone else and you're not throwing your vag around to the fucking football team, girls. Put it away now, girls. Okay? Zip that shit up. Commitment, engagement, marriage, right? There are literally no rules past the four. Those are the levels. It's like, it blows my mind because this is me doing research and I'm going, there's no stages past the four. Yeah, that's right. Because typically marriage equates to death. Tell me I'm wrong. How many people right now are listening with or without their fucking spouse and going, yeah, like marriage is fucking bullshit. It kind of is, right? You get the fucking same dick every day. Or every year or month or whatever, you know, your habit happens to be. The fucking vagina never changes. It gets fucking looser. It doesn't get better. Shit doesn't get tighter. You know what I mean? It's the same mundane shit. I actually used to believe that marriage was great because you could secure that dick and ride that dick off into the sunset for the rest of your life. And it doesn't, it's, I've learned from being married that it is not like that. And I know there are exceptions to the rule. I get it. My sister, who is 44 years old. Fuck, she's old, man. 44 years old. I'm 42, so I mean, not that old. But she's been married since she was 18 to the same guy. And as far as I know, they're still fucking. That's crazy. That's like, yeah, that's crazy shit. I've been married for 6 years. Sorry, I've been with Dave for 6 years. I've been married for 5 years. But you guys, where are the next steps? Like, there's the four stages of relationship. Why does it stop at four? Because marriage equates to death. That's what I think. And I'm not saying my marriage is dead or everyone's is. I know there are exceptions to the rules, but I think that the confines of marriage often, more than not, and from what I see, result in people either being miserable and or stepping out and sucking other dicks and getting into other kinds of shenanigans outside of the marriage. I just don't see the average couple that are married happy. I don't. Like, truly happy. Oh, everyone can post for a fucking Instagram post, right? And smile. Let's smile like we fucking love each other. Yeah, you're all fucking sucking the dick when the fucking picture's taken. The fucking best friend's dick. Come on, guys. Let's be real, right? And let's not fake shit. Dave and I haven't posted a post together, like in love, lovey-dovey, for a while now. And the last time we did is like date night and it just, we were in the mood, but that mood quickly left us. And it's like, why is that happening? When you start dating, right? When you're like in the beginning stages, it's like, oh my God. You can't get enough of each other and you do special stuff and you get creative, you get romantic. The text messages, right? The dick pics. Boys, I know you're dropping those down. And it's just like, what happens to that? What happens to that effort? I think it gets lost in marriage. I think it gets lost in time. I think it gets lost in the fact that we are creatures of habits and habits become mundane and we just don't keep that fire lit. We don't keep ignited. Majority, I know there again are exceptions. My marriage now, Dave and I, okay, we are at, and this is where I'm going to get raw into the real shit because people don't want to talk about their real shit, do they? We do at Big Dick Energy. Dave and I are at what I would call a crossroads in our marriage. So when we met 6 years ago, right, I was hot as fuck, but I was like, I was so sexy, but I was like a drunk, like a pothead, I like doing my drugs and, you know, smoking my weed and drinking my drinks and just like, I was reckless. Like, I didn't save money. I was like really frivolous with my shit. I was in real estate at the time. I was also director of sales and marketing for an industrial company. And I'm like, I had like three jobs when I met him. I also worked for the ministry with high risk youth. So I wasn't at lack of money, but I was frivolous with my money. Like, I'd sell a house, I'd get like a $30,000 check, and I'd be like, I'm gonna go buy a fucking truck. Like, it just, I was a fucking irresponsible asshole. And I would say, like, I was kind of like a bit of a loser. But the truth is I was just a lost soul. So when Dave met me, he's like 9 years older than me, you know, has his stuff, like semi together, you know, divorced 10 years and, you know, has a car, which is great, has a job. You know, like blue collar, like regular dude, right? And he showed up in my life. And Dave is a fixer by nature. He likes to fix things. And he was truly my knight in shining armor. And he showed up in my life in his, at the time, sexy black Dodge Charger, like rolled up literally, like first date in my life, just with like a shit eating grin on his face. And I was like, I'm probably gonna fuck this guy tonight. And I did. And I got pregnant. Whole other podcast. The first 6 months of dating was awesome. Like, that was probably like some of the greatest 6 months of my life. And why? Because my love language is fucking. You guys, like, I don't need money. I make all the money I need. I don't need a mansion. I fucking live in a fucking mansion. You know what I'm saying? I don't need the fancy because I do the fancy. I get the fancy. What I do need is constant dick in my face, in my fucking ear, in my fucking mouth, in my belly button. Like, pick a hole, any hole. That's like kind of my rule. 6 months of our relationship, the first 6 months was like, I got laid 3 to 5 times a day steady. Like, my vagina was like the Grand fucking Canyon. Hello, hello, hello. You know what I'm saying? And I love that because that's my love language. I got to stay a hot mess also being like that. I didn't have to stay responsible or any of those things. But then I got pregnant. I got pregnant the first night that I met him because I slutted out. He slutted out. We drank a lot of wine. We ate some charcuterie. We watched a Robin Williams movie and then freaking my vagina fell open, right? Because that's sexy. And I got pregnant. We moved in together. No joke. Within under a week of knowing each other. And we had a baby and got married. All of this, all within 1 year. So D got to pick up for 4 years, really, out of the six we've been together, got to pick up the pieces of the broken Jazzy. And we have lived, I would say, majority of our relationship in what I would personally call like a blissful dysfunction. You know, like, we don't beat on each other. We don't like smack each other across the face and go like, you bitch, or, you know, you cunt. Like, we don't do that. But I'll tell you something. We sleep in separate beds. We do. Yeah. It's why I can't live in a house that doesn't have more than 4 bedrooms. I need to have my own bed. And there is a connection that is missing between him and I. Don't get me wrong. When we do fuck, it is extraordinary. Like, the sex is exceptional. I always have orgasms. He knows how to play with the hoo-hoo. He's good at what he does. Okay? That's never lacking, but it's like once a month. It's average. It's like below average to me, actually. So again, going back to fast forward 6 years later from meeting, and he no longer has the fuck face of a spouse that I was. You know, this guy had to come home from work to either a drunk or stoned or like just, yeah, like high off my ass chick. He's come home to me convulsing on the floor and having to call paramedics. We've had to, well, him had to call the police for me fucking going after, like, crazy shit that happens when you're fucked up. And that was me. But that is not me any longer. So no more alcohol, right? Y'all know that follow me. I don't drink. I won't drink. 6 months sober, clean. I don't smoke pot. I don't do the cocaine. Okay? I don't touch shit. I drink water, man, and a lot of coffee. No more drugs, no more alcohol, no more Netflixing all day on the couch. I have 100% turned myself by myself. Yeah, with the help of some others, but by myself, essentially, I have 100% turned myself into an entirely different human being. And I'm fucking proud of it. I look at myself, I look in the mirror for the first time at 42 years old, and I can say that I love what I see as a human being. Like, I'm proud of myself. Like, if I wasn't me, I would hang out with myself. I would roll with me. I'm cool shit, but I'm getting off track. I was, you know, 6 years ago, I was below mediocre. I was below average. I was below the mundane. And I became outstanding. I did. I became outstanding. And for those of you rolling your eyes right now going like, this bitch is bragging. My good friend Jay Staniforth says, it ain't bragging if it's true. And I am. I'm a fucking legend. So with this being said, and with these radical changes that happened with me, so came what I call the great divide between my husband and I. Why? Because I am no longer the woman that needs fixing. And he no longer needs to be the knight in shining armor that has to save the damsel in distress, right? Like, so today, literally before making this podcast, that is, by the way, and as you can probably tell, unedited, uncut. This is all raw, real, everything, okay? We sat for hours today. Hours. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, talking. Is there a fix for this? I told him what the new me wants. I told him what the new me desires. And there is a deep love. Like, there is a very real and deep love between Dee and I. And with that being said, there is also a difference between being in love and loving one another. And as one of my mentors had said, like, love is not enough. You gotta have more. You gotta have something deeper than just love, right? Most couples that stay together, they ride on a wave of like, it's okay. Like, we've got like 75, 80%, like, we're good. Like, it's okay. It's good enough. And that, my friends, is mediocre and mundane and average. And as you know, I am allergic to average. I don't do anything average. This episode, and I know I'm not leaving you with like golden wise words of wisdom here necessarily, but this episode is one that is a part one of two, because I didn't get any direct answers from Dave as to where we're gonna go. Are we gonna part ways and try to find happiness apart from one another and still just have mutual love and respect for one another? Or are we going to be able to continue being a couple, right? And give each other what we both need for being people that are different from 6 years ago when it is that we met. That is all for today, folks. Okay. This is Jazzy, Big J, Jazzy Daisy, bringing you some big dick energy just in a different way today, because I really want to talk about these things that I feel so many people struggle with: being in unhappy marriages, pretending that they are, and you don't have to do it anymore. I'm not. I won't do it. And I'm not in an unhappy marriage. I'm just at a place where I'm going, I want these things, and if I can't have them, I move on. And if your standard is not at that level, you are living in mediocrity, my friend. Happy Friday, happy weekend, happy Easter. I look forward to part two of this, and I look forward to hearing from you all. Much love.
Peace.
Thirty-five. 35.6%. 35.6% every single year in the United States, more than 10 million men and women are subjected to domestic violence in one form or another. Rape, physical violence, stalking, the list goes on. 35.6%. This number is astonishing to me. And the sad part about it is it's not a surprising number. 35.6%, 10 million people in one country. What do you think is going on in the rest of the world, guys? But I'm not here to talk about the rest of the countries in the world. I'm here to talk about me. I'm here to talk about my story and how domestic violence has affected and impacted my life personally. In 2004, I was 24 years old, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, young and naive and just oblivious to so much of the world. I had eight charges, folks, pressed against me. I was sitting in a jail cell in one of the multiple prisons that I had been in my young age already. This particular journey starting with jail cell being in Langley, a city back home in Canada. I then moved to the worst, Surrey pretrial. That was a fucking scary, scary experience. All jail is. But that one in particular, very scary. But I ended that journey in Chilliwack Corrections. All of these are institutions back again, back home in Canada. I was a mess, folks, and not the hot kind, okay? I had been, going back again, this is 2004, I had been in the most physically and mentally violent four-year relationship. And it was coming to its finale, finally. I lost friends, I lost family, I even lost employment from the awful choices that I continued to make to be with someone who I can now only refer to as a fucking monster. Plain and simple. I won't say his name because he is that lunatic that if he found out where I lived, he would hop on a plane and come to try to kill me. He's fucking crazy. I'm going to tell you the story about this. Does it make me a little bit uncomfortable? Yeah, it does. But if I can be real and honest with you and possibly even help someone who's listening to this right now, my job here is done. He was handsome. He was tall. He was muscular, bald-headed, smooth talker, 21-inch biceps, and had the inability to keep his hands off of me, which I love. My love language is sex, right? And that was a big thing for me. At first, I thought his jealousy was kind of sexy. I was self-conscious. I was naive. I was a scared, and I'm going to say this with like air quotes, adult, but truly like a child, like an immature child in my heart. I was, and he saw me like I was someone that was vulnerable, and he was a predator. He saw me. He liked what he saw. He came in hot. And he said all the right things that only a true sociopath could say. Really. Looking back, right? You look back, you see the red flags of a situation in a relationship or a work environment. You can see where things went wrong. Whew, if I could go back in time. But then I wouldn't be the woman that I am today, right? I wouldn't have the big dick energy that I have today. He swept me off my feet, guys. He was my Prince Charming at first, and I found myself in this kind of like whirlwind of a romance. Like everything was on fire. Like, you know, when you see those drawings, like the caricatures, that was my life in love. Like my love life was a caricature, and I was in heaven, really, with this guy. He bought me a promise ring with like a big diamond on it. So more like an engagement ring within a week. Yeah, red flag right there. For those of you listening and those of you that don't know, red flag right there. I moved him into my condo the same day. mistake. And very quickly, I found out the once cute jealousy, I found out that it was going to turn into something a lot scarier. So if a man was like checking me out and we're in public, like we often were, it would always, there was no exception to this, folks, it would always result in violence. Whether it was verbal, that was the best case scenario, or physical. It would always, always result in violence. He did not care. I was his possession. That's how he looked at me. I was his possession. And he made sure not only I, but everyone around me, including my friends and family, knew it. I belonged to him. Now, looking back, I know why I stayed. I know now I wish I could go back 20 years to that girl and go, yo, let me help you get the fuck out of this. This will not serve you. This will not help you. But I can't. So what can I do is I can make myself an example. And I can make sure that as many women as I can touch, and yes, even men, don't go through what I went through. Now, I could go through all the stories and all the traumas and every situation that happened, but it would literally take up 10 hours of your day. Okay, so I'm going to give you just a couple snippets of what it was like to be in the most terrifying relationship of my lifetime. I thought that I could fix someone that was irreparably broken, is what I would call him. I saw a little glimpse of kindness and love in him, because when he was loving and romantic, oh my God, like, oh my God, and like the sex, right? And that's my love language. But what it really turned out to be was that he was actually not kind and he was not good. He was fucking evil. He would call me fat. He would make fun of me on a near daily basis and say how disgusting certain parts of my body were, like my thighs, like my inner thighs. I don't have the thigh gap. I never have. I never will. It's what keeps my vagina warm. Okay. But he would make fun of that. Amongst other things, he would call my ass cottage cheese. He would say I had gross boobs. The list of things was long, and it's funny because he couldn't at the same time keep his hands off of any of these parts. Classic abuser, right? Police were often called. Often, I have lost count of, and I don't go back to revisit this situation and scenario in my life very often, but when I do, like I truly have lost count. I don't know how many times the police, the RCMP back home in Canada, were called to wherever it was that I was living with him. But many, many, many times, if not hundreds. Police were often called by concerned neighbors. I never called the police ever. So many precious items to me, guys, like my clothing, like clothes that I loved, that I worked hard to buy, gifts from my family, like from my mom, my grandma, pieces of art from my friends and family smashed, some things lit on fire. In the end, he destroyed all of my personal belongings that I had, which is fine. Fine for now, because I wouldn't be using them today, but then it hurt. But the most important thing, the one thing that he destroyed that affected me for many years to come, was he destroyed Jazzy. He destroyed me. And he destroyed who I ended up being for a long, long time. There were imprints of my body in, like, guys, listen to this. There were imprints of my body in multiple places of a rundown shack he owned, just like this little piece of shit out of town. I suffered multiple bruised lips. I remember one time being punched in the face so hard and my lip the next morning joined up, my upper lip joined to my nose because it was smashed so brutally, and just like tasting the flesh and the blood, of the part of my lip inside that was just smashed up and cut. Black eyes, cuts. I remember the feeling one night in particular of just hot, the heat of hot blood in the back of my head where he'd taken my face, okay? grabbed me, taken my face. He was a big guy. He was like 230 plus pounds, all muscle. And I'm just like a 5'1" little girl. Taken me, smashed me up against the bathroom mirror, the washroom mirror, and was repeatedly holding my face in his ginormous hand and just smashing my head repeatedly into the glass. And I'll never forget that feeling of the heat in the back of my head and blood everywhere. I've worked multiple jobs always just because I love working. And in the time I was with him, I lost 2 out of 3 of my jobs. Sustaining anything, friendships, employment, impossible. It's very, very difficult to maintain employment, especially healthy employment, if you are showing up injured or crying or hurt. It's just impossible. I lost a ton of weight when I was with this guy, like a ton of weight. But if you're telling someone they're fat every single day, they're probably going to lose weight. So not the healthy kind. I remember another night as well, you guys. We were at this spot. It was like a pub. A very, very popular place. I think it was called something like Central Brew or City Central Brew. Something like that in the town of Surrey. And he was in the bathroom, I believe, doing a rail of cocaine like he normally went to the bathroom to do. And I had been approached by this, you know, handsome dude, which happened to me a lot. If I was sitting alone, I was most likely getting hit on. That's the way it was in my 20s. And at the moment, I was politely declining this person's offer of a drink. He wasn't creepy. He just saw me, pretty girl, sitting at a bar and, you know, can I get you a drink? And I was like politely declining. And that's when my abuser came out and was in his face. And this was just a common occurrence. In his face, screaming, like, let's take this outside. Long story short, I broke up the fight between the two, just as I always had and always did before that. And got in the car with him, which was a stupid thing at the time. But this was just part of what I did then, right? Got in the car with him. And this turned into the scariest night of my life. Like the single scariest night of my life. You guys, even talking about it, like I get a little bit flustered thinking about it because it just seems so far to me from the woman that I am today. And yet it was my reality. It's who I was. I got in the car with him. He's pulling my hair. He literally has clumps of my hair in his hands, punching me with his right arm, holding the steering wheel with his left, and slapping me in the face, just everything, calling me names, screaming at me. I'm screaming, please let me out, like pleading, please let me out, please let me out, please drop me off. And all I could feel is the car just accelerating. His foot is just completely pressed on the gas. And this is, listen, if you're listening and you're like, I don't believe in God, that's on you. That totally cool. Hey, if you like believe in something else, or if you're an atheist and you think that you're going to like die and turn into the fucking earth and there's nothing beyond that, good for you. I believe in God. And I believe that God was absolutely watching me that night and he absolutely saved me. And it was one of just many times that he had to. And as this accelerated, you know, car is going, we're hitting red light after red light after red light, busy city. And I don't know how I didn't die. I don't know how, but I do remember him looking at me and saying, this is how you're going to fucking die tonight. And that's a quote unquote. These are only a couple snippets, you guys, of 4 years of literal torture. And why? Because I thought he loved me. Because I clearly did not love myself, unfortunately. So why did I end up in jail, right? Y'all that have made it this far are like, what am I missing here, Jazz? Why did you end up in fucking jail? Because I never once called the cops on him ever. And because I did something that changed my life. And here's the story to that. So this was just kind of a lead up as to why I ended up in a maximum security prison that when I met my now husband, love of my life, David, was a corrections officer at. We just never crossed paths. Crazy. Woo! Anyways, okay. Back on track. So we were fighting in his home again. Like, this is just another occasion. And I remember this night out of all the nights and me thinking to myself, like, he was choking me out. I was losing consciousness. I was coming back and I was trying to fight for my life. And I remember thinking that night, and I thought it before, but really saying to myself, like, you're done tonight, man. Like, your parents are getting the call. Like, you're done. You're gone. 24, life ahead of me. And trying to escape, like, any time that he would hit me or punch me or throw me against a wall or smash my face or punch me in the lip, like, any of those things, anytime I would try to leave, he would be a barricade to any, like, window, door, exit, entrance. It didn't matter, you guys. And this one time, I just managed to get past him. And I remember I'm wearing joggers and a sports bra. And I'm running down the driveway, and I'm probably a good 3/4 to the end of the driveway. And he catches me, grabs me, rips off my sports bra. And I'm setting up to, you know, get punched in the face again or something, or kicked or something. And he runs back into the house, locks the door. I then run to the, like, most humiliating experience of my fucking life, run to the door. And I'm pleading and I'm crying and I'm trying to shield my breasts with my left arm, knocking on the door with my right and, like, please let me in. Please let me in. Humiliated. And he was laughing and making fun of me. Right? Seeing me in that state. So this is the one and only time that I have blacked out in my life outside of, like, drinking too much liquor. But you can tune into that podcast. It's on here as well. It's not going to be in this podcast, but, like, I have never blacked out. I'm not someone who does. And I blacked out. I walked to the shed. I grabbed a pair of rusty shears. I held them behind my back with my right hand. I went to the door. I knocked on the door and said in a very sweet voice, "I'm sorry. It's my fault. I'm sorry." I don't remember any of this. This all came out in court. And when he opened the door, I proceeded to try to cut his fucking head off with the pair of shears. And if this guy is still out there, if he's still alive, he is abusing whoever he is with. I don't use the word monster lightly. He's abusing whoever he is with. And still will have the scars on both sides of his neck to prove that from me. I'm not bragging about it, but it is something that saved my life, was that action, right? So he went profusely bleeding, went to the hospital, obviously filed a police report, left statements. They came and arrested me. I got thrown in jail, of course. I got bailed out of jail by my folks. And when I got bailed out of jail, part of my conditions to not going back to jail for a long period of time were no contact order, which I was happy to oblige by. I moved out of my condo. My folks moved me into their home as to try to protect me from this person, because we knew he would be coming back. And so that was not, again, where I ended up in jail for a longer period of time. What happened was he found out that I was staying at my parents' home. He came to their door, and this was a day that my parents, like, they were always home with me, and he came to the door, and I remember calling my dad saying, "He's at the door," and I'm, like, frantic, and my parents are like, "We're almost home, like, we're almost there, just keep the door closed, like, it's okay, we're almost there," and me, this makes me just want to, like, smack my old self, I opened the door, like, a smidge. And I'm like, "What do you want?" And he had this big bouquet of flowers. And he's like, "I just want to say I'm sorry." And I said, I don't want you to be here. I don't want anything to do with you. You need to leave." And he pushed in the door, flowers on the ground, I'm screaming. Neighbors are coming out at this point, but no one's helping me. he proceeds to go into my parents' kitchen, grab a pair of scissors, stab himself in the neck. Police station was right up the road from my mom and dad's house, and he sauntered out the door saying, "You're going in permanently now." Like, congratulations, basically. Blood pouring out of his neck. And I'm just on the floor crying. Hadn't touched him. My parents arrived within 2 seconds. I'm on the floor. They're like, "What is going on?" Long story short, police arrived, picked me up, and that's when I went in for longer. And that's when there were 8 charges pressed against me. And I'm not going to list those charges off because that's not important right now. What's important is I was the victim and I was treated like I was the abuser. And we're in a different age now. Times are much different and women are being heard. And so are men when they are being abused. And back then, almost 20 years ago, we weren't. So I got off my charges. I had an amazing lawyer. I had no criminal record whatsoever. I can fly in and out of countries as I please. Nothing on my record, but I was ordered to go to anger management and I did have a probation officer for 1 year. So all of this goes to say, folks, that, and I mean, these are like a couple of things that happened in 4 years. So you can only imagine what else happened in that time frame. Once you make your escape, once you've made your escape, your abuser will try to win you back. Not because he or she loves you, but to he or she, you are a piece of their property that they must recover. A runaway slave to be recaptured. This is how they see you. And don't ever believe otherwise. Okay, guys? A house where a woman, in my case, a house where a woman is unsafe is not a home. And I am lucky, I am so lucky to have left with my life. And I know for a fact if this person had the opportunity, he would take that life from me in a heartbeat. Side note that I didn't intend to include on this podcast, but I feel like I must. I ended up finding a guy that wanted to take care of me and take me away from all this craziness because my abuser was still trying to find me wherever I was and was threatening to kill me. Police weren't doing anything about it. Really disgusted with the judicial system, but that's a whole other podcast. And I found my eldest daughter's father who took me away from all this and moved me up into the mountains to start a new life. And give me a new chance. And I will forever be eternally grateful to him because he not only gave me my daughter, one of my greatest treasures, but he never laid a hand on me, never yelled at me, just wanted me to be happy and to take care of me and actually did love me. In saying that, when we were up in the mountains, Kiana had just been born and she's now 14. And she had just been born and I got a Facebook message. This is in 2008. I got a Facebook message from a young girl who looked very similar to me and was reaching out for help. So long story short, this person, this abuser, was doing the same thing to her. And she thought, based on what he was telling her while they were in the relationship, that this Jasmine chick, oh, fuck, she's just a fucking bitch and she's this and she's that and she's horrible. And as time was going in the relationship and the abuse started coming out towards her, she started to think differently and go, maybe this Jasmine woman isn't the bad guy here. And that's when she reached out to me. Long story short about this, I helped her get out of this relationship. But I was very clear in this that once you are out of this and he is out of your life, I don't want to ever hear from you again. And that wasn't me being mean, but that chapter of my life was the most painful and I wanted it closed. So I did help one person get out and apparently he would get like blackout drunk and yell at her and call her Jasmine. Scary shit, eh? I'm going to leave you with this, guys, okay? Early warning signs for relationships that become violent. Let's start with one, okay? There's going to be 9. Fast pace, an intense amount of attention. The relationship moves unusually fast forward. With commitment, you become a couple very quickly or move in together. Two, this is when the isolation begins. They manipulate you into giving up friends, activities, and hobbies outside of the relationship and controls everywhere you go and who you see. Three, unpredictable, irrational mistrust. Extreme reactions to rejection, double standards, creates rules that apply to you and not he or she, and has a Jekyll and Hyde type of mood swing. Four, shifts blame. He or she refuses, the abuser now, refuses to accept responsibility and blames external factors, says their behavior is caused by you or their love for you. I just love you so much that I had to hate you. Downplays or denies the abuse. Five, jealousy, extreme, irrational jealousy. Constantly suspicious of anyone you spend time with. No matter where you are, what you're doing, you are accused of cheating on this person. Six, monitoring, continually checking where you are and who you're with. Angers when you don't respond immediately and demands things like, this is new age, online passwords. I didn't have Facebook when I met him. Unrealistic, seven, unrealistic statements of fantastic love for you. Can't live without you. Like, I'm obsessed with you. You're my one and only. We'll be together forever. Babe, nothing can keep us apart. Eight, possessive. Takes control to the extreme. Entitlement. Views you as rightfully owned property. And threats, if I can't have you, no one can. I can attest to this. Hearing, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to bury you, and cover your body with lie and no one will find you. That's possessive. And that is something I've been told. And finally, number nine, boundaries. Will not take no for an answer. Refuses to accept your right to privacy. And if you try to leave, get help. Because this person will hurt you. 36%, 35.6, 10 million people in the U.S. are abused every single year. If you are struggling with an abuser, it doesn't have to be physical. It can be mental. It can be spiritual. If you are struggling with abuse and need to get out, I can help you. I've got the tools for this and I can help you. Contact me. Shoot me a text. Area code 343-270-4688. You can also find me on the World Wide Web. Instagram, BDE with Jasmine Daisy. Facebook, at Jasmine Daisy. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter. I'm everywhere, you guys. You can find me everywhere. Also on my website, bigdickenergycoaching.com. Okay, if you need help getting out of or are potentially starting an abusive relationship, stop. Let me save you the heartache. Let me save you the time out of your life that you will never get back. Why? Because I'm an expert in abusive relationships and I will never be in one again. Love you all. Much love. Happy fucking Saturday. Keep flowing that big dick energy. And I can't wait to talk to you again. Love you all. Peace.